Hello and welcome back to another Three-Peat podcast episode, season three, episode one. Feels good to be back, boys. I'm your host, Josh Fromwitz, and I am joined with me, my co-hosts,
Stephen Bonazzo
and Alex Castle.
Boys, it's good to be back. See you healthy. Happy New Year. Happy holidays. Hope you guys are doing well.
Happy New Year.
Josh, thank you.
2021 is looking real bright for us. We're excited to be partnered with Wild Chat Sports. Joining them, we're going to be aiming to merge the entertainment and sports industry into one space. And by joining along with them, it's going to be a big and better season with potentially big guests. So the three of us are very excited about that and this amazing opportunity. But first, to kick off the show, there's breaking news that happened today. The New York Mets making some big moves, acquiring all-pro shortstop Francisco Lindor and pitcher Carlos Carrasco from the Cleveland Indians. And the Big Apple. It's no longer just the Yankees. The Yankees don't run New York anymore. I think it's kind of split. So what do you boys think about the big move?
It's definitely a good move for the Mets. I think it's a necessary, or it was a needed and essential move for the Mets to make if they want to take that next step. And if you're the Yankees now, you better wake up. You got to sign LeMahieu, and I'm not trying to make this a LeMahieu thing, but what the Mets just did by trading for Lindor is saying, we're enough being mediocre, enough with just making the wild card or missing out just barely. Like, they wanted to make a splash, and they did. And Lindor, he's 27. He'll be a free agent next offseason, but the Mets are not worried about that. Clearly, new ownership, Steve Cohen, new general manager. They want to win. They're willing to spend whatever. And I mean, good for them. But it makes the Yankees think maybe they should wake up and sign LeMahieu and make some moves. And it's also good for MLB because this offseason has been dragging on. So finally, there's a move made. So congrats to the Mets. I think it'll be a move that will pay off not only for this upcoming season, but many seasons to come.
Yeah, they definitely get their shortstop of the future because he is still young and he's elite. But this could also be good, like you said, as a wake-up call for the Yankees to sign LeMahieu, which all Yankee fans have been begging management to do. Castle, what do you think?
Steve made some great points. You know, Cohen did a lot to purchase the Mets, and he successfully did. And like Steve said, you know, he came in and he wanted to show people that the Mets are tired of being second fiddle to the Yankees. And the Mets do have a solid fan base. We all know a lot of Mets fans who are very passionate about this organization. So it was time for them to make the move. And I think this was a great move. We haven't seen the Mets be excited about a shortstop like this since Reyes has been around. So I think having a shortstop that brings a lot to the table again, it'll be great. Very happy for the Mets. Can't wait to see what they do with this move.
Yeah, I agree. Steve?
And one last thing. You know, it's funny because last year, entering the offseason, the Mets had the big aces. They had Syndergaard and obviously DeGrom. And then the Yankees matched that by signing Cole. You know, and then we had Gleyber, LeMahieu, but Gleyber, our guy at short. And the Mets didn't really have anyone solid there. And now they can kind of poke fun at the Yankees, but, you know, match the Yankees and say, hey, look who we got. We got Francisco Lindor, a few-time all-star. So definitely a power move by the Mets.
Definitely a power move indeed. Baseball is going to be starting in less than a month, actually. So it'll be excited to see that return, see the Yankees, hopefully, with DJ on the field. But going back to what you talked about, Castle, you said Mets fans are passionate. Reminds me of another New York team, football team indeed, actually, your New York Giants. And within the past week, a lot of passionate fans have been very outspoken, not because of their game, but because of the Philadelphia-Washington football game. So, Alex, I'm going to have you start first. You know what I'm trying to get at. Let's hear what your thoughts are about the Eagles tanking for you guys to not be in the playoffs.
First, I want to go out there and say, despite not making the playoffs, I was satisfied with what I saw this season. Joe Judge is a fantastic coach, and he's the guy that we've needed all along. We had a fantastic defense, still got some ways to go, but onto the topic of the Philly game, look, you know, the Eagles and Giants have had this rivalry for so long. We don't like each other. It's very apparent. But at the end of the day, like Judge said during his press conference following the game, it wasn't just the players that opted into the season. It was the coaches. It was the management. It was the families. It was all the staff. And to not give 100%, even in a game where you know that nothing's going to happen, that's where the issue lies. Sure, we had an opportunity to make the playoffs, yes. And should we have relied on that game specifically? No. There were games that, if you look back in the season, we should have won. But at the end of the day, I don't respect what Doug Peterson did. As you could see, many players were vocal, not only on our side, but on Philly's side. You know, you had guys like Miles Sanders come out and speak, who's young talent, and that's just not good. And, you know, in an organization where you're trying to rebuild and you're trying to get good draft prospects to come to your team, how's that going to look where you, it shows where you have a coach that doesn't give 100% till the end? So I'm mad that we didn't make the playoffs, disappointed that Philly, you know, didn't pull through with the win. But I think the bigger picture is the fact that Peterson didn't give it 100% till the end of the season. And that's where my issue lies.
And Castle, totally to your point, that's where a lot of people have issues, because a lot of people are right. And even Joe Judge said it, and Logan Ryan, I believe. The Giants only had 6 wins. Normally, a 6-win team wouldn't even be in the conversation to make the playoffs. You're more in the conversation of a top 10 pick. But with the way the NFC East worked this year, which we all know was bonkers and just out of control and crazy, you guys were in contention. And unfortunately, it was pretty much up to the Eagles. And they decided, like, to say, hey, you know what? We'll get the better draft pick. The Giants will make the playoffs. Bada bing, bada boom, over with. And it sucks because, like you said, what Joe Judge said, which I really liked, how it wasn't just the players opting in, it wasn't just the coaches. Like, everyone opted in. This season was a remarkable, you know, it was a crazy season with so much between COVID and everything just going on in the world and in 2020 that it took all of them to make it happen. And for the Eagles to just kind of, and I don't want to just blame the Eagles. I blame more Doug Peterson, you know, because it's not Jalen Hurts' fault that he got benched, because he was giving them a great chance to win that game. If he stayed in, I think they could have won that game. But then Doug Peterson benched Alshon Jeffrey, Miles Sanders. I can't even think who else. You know, other guys on defense. So there's a lot of guys that were benched. And then he, in his press conference, with a straight face, want to say, you know, well, some of our stars still played, like Hurts, Brandon Graham, you know, who else? But it wasn't the entire team. You have more stars, and they decided not to play all of them. So I don't know if you can really say with a straight face that you were trying to win that game 100%, especially when you bench Jalen Hurts for Nate Sudfeld because he deserves some reps. I mean, that's just awful to me.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it just, I think two things. One, they're either not sold that Jalen Hurts is the guy and they're trying to evaluate the possible quarterbacks on their roster, so Nate Sudfeld, and possibly draft a new one. But if you are sold that Hurts is the guy, then why not let him play and prove that he is the guy?
Because they were scared, or whoever, management or Doug Peterson, was scared that if they kept Jalen Hurts in that game, because it was only, they were winning 1-14-10, and then they were down 17-14 with still a lot of time left in the game, that if they kept Jalen Hurts in, they probably, or they had a great chance of winning that game. Because even when they put Nate Sudfeld in and they were turning the ball over and just looking like they weren't even playing at all, they were still getting opportunities to win the game, and they still, you know, found ways to blow it. So, you know, I don't, and even that, like Nate Sudfeld, he's been in the league for, he's not the guy. If anything, Jalen is a guy. And if you're not sold on Jalen, then like, they got a lot of problems they got to figure out. But yeah, I mean, because I can see why Carson Wentz's relationship is fractured with Doug Peterson, because after the way Doug Peterson coached that game and sent in his press conferences, I don't know, he doesn't really seem to be too much of a likable or guy to get along with. So I'm glad I'm not a fan of the Eagles right now, or an Eagles player.
And they announced that both Peterson and Jeff Lurie are returning for next year. So I guess that just adds to Philly's problems.
Without a doubt.
But hey, that's not a problem for me. Let them continue to do that. And one more thing I want to add about this situation. The way that I see it, it just fuels the fire for next season. We were so close to making the playoffs, and look what happened. I know that with what Judge has brought and with what the culture he's brought to these players, this ending to the season is going to bring more into 2021.
Now, Castle, I do have a question for you, though, and just came to my mind when Josh said that the Eagles are going to keep Peterson and Lurie. You know, I did see the Giants are going to keep Gettleman. Now, granted, Gettleman had a good draft. He had some great signings. He obviously hired Joe Judge. They extended Patrick Graham, your defensive coordinator, who proved to be an up-and-coming coordinator. And he was getting some head coaching, opportunities that teams wanted for him to interview. So do you like the move, or do you think, I know there were some rumors that he might get moved to another position and hire a new GM, but John Mara made it clear that Gettleman is staying as general manager. What's your feel with that?
I wasn't happy with it. I'm not a real fan of Gettleman. I do like some of the moves he's made. One of my favorite moves that he made was that he drafted Bradberry with Carolina and then he brought him to us. Bradberry's been huge. He's an all-pro cornerback. He was top this year. So yes, I will give him the acknowledgement for that. But on the other hand, 3 seasons without making the playoffs, with making all of these moves, it's definitely concerning. And I know that he is a fan of Evan Engram. And 99.9% of Giants fans will tell you that they are over Evan Engram, that it's just pathetic what he's been doing. So I'm not too crazy about it. My hope is that he drafts correctly, he fills our needs, and if he's going to keep Evan Engram, then him and Judge need to talk and figure out a way for him to figure out this problem with his hands. Because I will say, if Engram could catch the ball, he's got a lot of potential. He's an athletic tight end. Yeah, he can't block, but he can fill in that slot. So we'll see. I'm not crazy about it, but I'm not shutting everything down right away.
That's agreeable. One thing with Engram I thought was funny around New Year's, they said NBC should hire Evan Engram to drop the ball on New Year's Eve.
I didn't see that. That's hilarious, though.
So, yeah, I thought that was pretty good.
If I'm remembering this correctly, when you guys played in Philly, you ended up losing that game. Evan Engram was the one who dropped the ball, and if he caught that and scored the touchdown, you would be in the playoffs and it wouldn't be an issue, correct?
That is correct, Josh. Yes, thank you for the reminder.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure I had my facts correct. But the Giants, while we're on that subject, we talked about now they're not in the playoffs and they're focused on the draft. There's a lot of draft guys that are in the conversation. Obviously, we're going to talk Heisman winner Devontae Smith and where we think he's going to go. So, Steve, I know you're a big fan of Mr. Smith, so let's hear what you think.
I am. First of all, congratulations to Devontae Smith. Well deserved. But he, whatever team he goes to, I think he'll make a big impact on. And I know the Giants, they said they're going to be aggressive with getting playmakers for Daniel Jones. But you got to watch out for those Eagles too. The Eagles pick before the Giants. So I think the Eagles pick at 6 and the Giants pick at 11. So you got to be careful there. Now the Eagles did select Jalen Reagor last year in the first round, so do they go receiver back-to-back drafts? I don't know, but they do need to get more weapons. He could go to the Eagles, heck, Detroit. It's tough this year because there's a lot of teams that could opt to go quarterback or they could go receiver. So say like the Falcons not the Falcons because they got Ridley and Julio, but, you know, a team like the Lions, if they lose Galladay in free agency, they're going to need another weapon. But then there's also a lot of rumors, well, what's Stafford's future, especially with new management and coaching coming in? He's older now. So there's a lot of different things you got to figure out. But I think if he's available when the Giants pick, I can absolutely see the Giants swinging big and taking Devontae Smith. And I think that'll be one of the best picks of the draft. I mean, Castle, I think you would like that pick, right?
Absolutely. I would love that pick. I think he would fill the need of the receiver that we're looking for. Unfortunately, because he did win the Heisman, and congratulations to him, I do think that raised his stock to a point where we won't be able to get him. And I know Josh will add on to this because him and I talked about this, but I can see him going to Miami and teaming up there with Tua.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. That is a good point right there.
Miami picking at number three, you reunite Tua with one of his favorite targets from their Bama days. I think it's kind of a given that Miami will take him, though givens are not a, there's no such thing as a given in, when it comes to the draft, but I think it's a sure thing to say amongst the three of us, right, that Devontae Smith would end up as a Dolphin.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, coming into this season, a lot of people had like Jamar Chase as wide receiver one.
Jalen Waddle also.
Jalen Waddle. But between Chase sitting out, Waddle breaking his ankle, and then Devontae Smith just blowing off the charts with his stats and just his play, I think he's proven to be wide receiver one. And not even just because he won the Heisman, he just proved to be the best wide receiver in college football. He did. And the best thing about him, too, is he's so humble. You know, I don't know if you guys saw his Heisman speech, but it was a great speech, and he's a really humble kid, and he's well-deserving of everything he's earned so far because, you know, he said basically he's not the biggest. You know, he's tall, but he's pretty skinny. You know, he's pretty fast, but he's not the fastest. But he just works hard, and he just cares about the game, and it shows when he's, you know, I think he had 98 catches this year, 1,500 yards. I don't even know how many touchdowns.
And his stats are still going to grow because he's playing in the national championship game.
It is, well, that's it. So I like the kid in general. So whoever gets him, they're getting a game changer and they're getting just a good teammate.
My next question now is, we obviously know now that the Heisman frontrunner was Trevor Lawrence. He's the projected number one. But if Justin Fields and the Ohio State Buckeyes somehow defeat the Alabama Crimson Tide in the national championship game, does that raise Fields' stock to the point where he is QB number one in the draft? What do you guys think?
You know what? I can't say it will. I like Fields a lot, and I think if he goes to your Jets at two, or if the Jets decide to build around Darnold and he falls to, say, even Atlanta, return back to his home state in Georgia. I just think Trevor Lawrence has been talked about this guy for so many years now, so the Jaguars can't pass up on it. The only way I say the Jaguars might take Fields at one is that they hired Urban Meyer. If they hired Urban Meyer as their coach, obviously Meyer coached Fields. Did he coach Fields? No, he didn't.
He coached against Trevor Lawrence, though.
He did. So I forgot Ryan Day took over Fields' first year. But still that Ohio State connection. And obviously, well, I'm pretty sure Fields, you know, he was probably in talks with Urban Meyer when he was transferring. So either way, Urban Meyer has a connection with Justin Fields. And so does he does with Trevor Lawrence since he's coached against him. But he's an Ohio State guy. But if Urban Meyer does not get hired, and even if they do hire Urban Meyer, I think pretty much management is going to tell him. And their owner, I forgot his name, but he basically said he still has control of the roster. He's going to want Trevor Lawrence. And, you know, that's just the field down there is they're getting Trevor Lawrence, and they probably, you know, will. So regardless if Justin Fields throws for 6 touchdowns, 500 yards, rushes for 200 yards, another 2 touchdowns, I believe Trevor Lawrence will be pick number one, and he will be repping the, I don't even know their colors, black and teal.
Black and teal, I think.
Either way, he'll be playing at Jacksonville.
I agree with Steve. I know you don't want to hear this, Josh. I do think Lawrence will be going number one to Jacksonville. They desperately need a quarterback. The Rico project has failed, which is very bad to see because I bought into Minshew mania. I do think if Fields wins the game, his draft stock rises, but I don't think enough to where Jacksonville gambles on him. You know, Ohio State quarterbacks have been a little surpassed. I mean, we just saw what happened with Dwayne Haskins, and I definitely think that might be something that people in the league look at. So you take a look at that, and, you know, I just don't think it's going to work. I mean, like Steve said, the Urban Meyer hiring could increase the chances, but I don't think it's enough. I mean, Trevor Lawrence, I think, is going to be one of the best quarterback prospects to come out of college football in years. The dude just brings so much physicality. His arm, I mean, it's crazy. And if they can build help around him, he's going to be great. So, you know, but we also do have some other quarterbacks that could come into the mix that could trump over Fields. So we got to see. It's very up in the air.
And this kind of reminds me of the 2019 NBA draft with Zion and RJ and Ja. You know, the Knicks that year were the worst team. They deserved to get the number one pick, just like how the Jets were all season. And then the Jets win just enough games to get pushed out of the number one spot, while the Jaguars jumped number one, just like the Pelicans jumped the Knicks. So the Pelicans got the big name in Zion. The Jaguars probably get the big name in Trevor Lawrence. But the Knicks still got a pretty good consolation prize, and I say that with in quotation, in R.J. Barrett, and Castle can attest to that. And I think the Jets, if they take Justin Fields at number two, that's a pretty good consolation prize too. I mean, Fields is a very talented kid. He's a hard worker. He's a humble kid too. He's won plenty enough games in college. And even when, you know, even myself, I was kind of doubting him this season. You know, the Big Ten championship game, he did not look good at all against Northwestern, and a lot of people, you know, were telling him that. But then he just showed up and absolutely just torched Clemson. So he's got game. He's got a lot of athleticism. So, Josh, if the Jets pick Fields at number two, you can't be mad.
Oh, I wouldn't be mad. I was just wondering if there's the possibility that Trevor Lawrence slips to us, but it doesn't seem likely. But don't get me wrong, I'd be very happy if the Jets do decide to take Fields. One thing that I really loved about him in that game was when he basically broke multiple ribs from that nasty hit, stayed in the game, and ended up throwing two 50-yard touchdown passes. And you saw him like grimacing in pain like the entire time and trying to like work it out. He was just in so much pain every throw. But he just pushed through the pain. The only thing is how he will look against Alabama. But if he fought through it once, I think he could do it again.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough matchup. That's going to be the broken ribs or whatever he endured during that game. You know, he probably had the adrenaline to finish it, but I'm sure he felt it the next morning. And you know, Alabama, they got some big boys. They got some speed. So
Jalen Waddle coming back.
That'd be crazy if he does. So, he's going to have to. But regardless, if he shows out like he did with Clemson or he struggles against Alabama, I mean, Alabama is clearly the best team in the country this year. I think so. And I think you guys agree. And I think pretty much every other college football fan agrees that Alabama, like, there's no stopping Bama. Who knows, maybe Ohio State will, but Alabama just has too many weapons and, you know, draft eligible players to be beaten, really.
It sounds like same old Bama, though. This happens every year. They're always this nasty.
Yeah. Last year, you know, with Tua's injury was kind of tough. But Mac Jones, though, I got to give him credit, too.
Yeah, he's legit.
And he'll be finding a team, an NFL team, come April. So, I mean, would I want the Bears to get him? I don't know. But I think he'll be a good fit on the Patriots, the Saints. He's kind of like that Tom Brady, Drew Brees type player. So watch out for him.
You mentioned your Bears. All right, we got to talk about them now, Stevie. You got a big game this weekend.
Yeah, in the Superdome. So, you know, they made the playoffs. I don't know how. I can't tell you how they somehow pulled that off. And they even blew it for themselves, because if we won against Green Bay on Sunday, which I kind of knew we weren't, and a lot of people kind of knew we wouldn't, winning, you're in. And they lost. And somehow, John, how do you pronounce his last name? Wolford or something like that from the Rams? I don't know, something like that. He somehow pulled off a victory for the Rams against the Cardinals. Now, Kyler did get hurt, which helped, because then it was pretty much backup versus backup.
I think it's safe to say, though, that the Rams defense really carried that win.
Without a doubt. John Wolford, you know, thank you, buddy. I appreciate it. But the Bears, though, they have to, and even Mitch was saying this, you know, we got nothing to lose. Everyone's overlooking them. But, you know, the thing with the Bears is they keep saying all these great quotes, but then you watch them and, I don't know, they don't look – I mean, the past couple weeks they look good, but against a good team like Green Bay, they don't really show up that good or finish good. So they got to say these quotes but actually mean it and go out there and play hard. So it's good that they're in the playoffs. But I think also this wild card round has a lot of, you know – I don't even know what to say. Like, if the Bears lose, I think Nagy's safe, but Ryan Pace could be gone. Maybe Mitch, you know, they're saying he could be safe, but maybe he'll be gone. So there's a lot of implications, and not just for the Bears, but a lot of teams. So the wild card round should definitely be interesting to watch, and I'll definitely be watching my Bears and supporting them.
Hopefully that means could be seeing Allen Robinson's last few games and he ends up wearing green
New York. Hold your horses, dude. Hold it. He's not leaving anywhere. He better not leave.
I wouldn't be opposed.
I know you wouldn't. Why would I want to see him leave? Like, come on. I'm sure you and Castle both love to see him in New York. Just Castle rather see him in blue and you'd rather see him in green.
Yeah, there's actually a report today that the Giants should go after him, but I'm not sure if we have the money after the recent deals that we made. Personally, I'd rather draft a receiver at this point, because obviously what you saw what we did in free agency last year going for Golden Tate, that kind of bit us in the ass. So I'd rather draft and work with what we got. But listen, I hope for your sake, Steve, Allen Robinson sticks with you guys, because if you guys keep Trubisky and get rid of Nagy, you might have something to work with.
Yeah, listen, you know, that's the thing. I think Nagy, by making the playoffs, kind of has secured his spot. But like I was saying, Ryan Pace, our general manager, might be gone. And, you know, whether – and actually, I saw this news earlier, and it's not really breaking news or official news, but they're saying Deshaun Watson might want out. So if he wants out, you know, the Bears can fix their problem from 2017 by just trading for him. Granted, they could have just drafted him to begin with like I wanted. But they could kind of, you know, bail themselves out a little bit. Granted, it'll take a lot of draft capital and maybe a player or two to get Watson over. So I wouldn't mind that. But listen, the thing with – I need to see if Mitch plays well Sunday, then we can talk about keeping him for next year. If he does not, then – definitely find another option. And then if you want to bring Mitch back as a backup, I just get rid of Foles. You want to bring him up, you know, as a backup, fine. But, you know, Mitch, he looked great against those defenses, you know, Houston, Jacksonville. There's another team, Minnesota, even Detroit. He didn't look bad. But again, they're bottom tier defenses, but he looked comfortable. He looked like he was controlling, commanding things. But then against Green Bay on Sunday, you saw he was back to him being frantic. And I get there was a lot on the line, and I could see him being nervous. You know, big rivalry game. Like I said, playoffs were on the line. So I get it if you're nervous, but you just see Rodgers. He just goes out there, and he just effortless, and he just is so calm and composed. So I know Mitch is not Rodgers, and he'll never be, and I don't want that. But I need to see Mitch be competitive and be consistent against good defenses too, and not just bad defenses, because then you're not going to go anywhere if you can't beat the good teams.
Yeah. You put it best. It'll be interesting to see how he does. He's obviously got a tough matchup with the Saints. Got 3 games Saturday, 3 games Sunday. It'll be an exciting full day, full weekend's worth of football. We'll talk about it next week. But now we're moving on to the hoops. I know, Alex, you've been waiting. You've been dying to talk about your Knicks. They're looking good. Julius Randle looks like he's the real deal. And that's going to be the first point that I want to talk about, because I know you, along with other Knicks fans, have criticized Julius Randle prior to the season, wanting to trade him, didn't think he was the future. But now he's putting up all-star numbers. So, Castle, let's hear. What do you think of Julius Randle?
Randle shut me up. From what I've seen from this season, he shut me up. I mean, when he was a Laker, the guy was, you know, in the paint, dunker, but now he's in much better shape. He's more versatile. He brings the ball up. He can shoot from the three. He passes. He does everything. And it's so refreshing to see a guy like that with the Knicks. I mean, like you said, Josh, all-star numbers. He's nearly averaging triple doubles every night. I mean, he's just going off. And it's just great to see. But I also got to give credit to Thibodeau for what he's done with coaching. Like you see with the Giants, with Joe Judge, he brings in this mentality with the Knicks that you're not just playing for me, you're playing for each other. And every night he gives them a game plan, and every night the players are sold on it. And it's just been great to watch Knicks basketball. I mean, I don't know if you guys caught the game last night against Utah. We put up a fight out to the end. Austin Rivers getting those 14 points at the end was nuts. I mean, the dude could not miss from the three. Very happy with him, too. The one thing I do got to say, though, is I want to see better play from RJ and Robinson. I've liked what I've seen so far. Mitch Robb missing dunks, he can't afford to do that. The guy's 7 feet. Like, come on, you're like, you look up ahead of you, the rim's right there. RJ can be a little sloppy sometimes. He's getting better looks, though. But overall, very happy with the Knicks. It's refreshing to jump from what I saw with the Giants this season to what I'm seeing with the Knicks now. I don't want to guarantee anything, but if they keep this momentum, the way the East is looking right now, I can see them being a low seed in the playoffs for sure.
Yeah, Kessel, actually, I didn't tune into the game last night. And I tuned in and I saw the score. Utah had a pretty big early lead. And I was like, oh, no. My brother's a big Knicks fan. I'm not. I'm a Bulls fan, obviously.
Your brother's got good taste. Giants and Knicks.
He does. He does. Well, for you, not for me. But I'm all Chicago pretty much, except for the Yankees. But, you know, I don't get Bulls games, so I'll just watch the Knicks or local. And I was watching them, and, you know, they were down early to Utah. And I know Utah's a pretty good team. Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert, Mike Conley. And then all of a sudden, the Knicks start coming back. Randle scoring at the free throw line. You know, Mitch, some points down low. And then, like you said, Austin Rivers, he just started nailing every three he took. And some of them were pretty contested or pretty deep, and he was, you know, cashing them like they were nothing. But the biggest thing I've taken away from the Knicks is they're all playing for each other and well together. You know, on the bench yesterday when Austin Rivers was hitting those threes, I saw all those guys on the bench ecstatic, enthused. You know, Manuel Quickly, one of your rookies they draft this year. I love that kid. I think he's fantastic.
Could be the steal of the draft. Could be the steal of the draft.
I think so at this point. And, you know, even Toppin, injured, he's still getting hyped. So, you know, these guys are excited for each other. They're playing well. They're excited that New York Knicks are finally winning in. And I think that is a big part to Tom Thibodeau. And I think, like you said, he's like Joe Judge. He's kind of got that tough mentality. And, you know, Thibodeau, even the preseason games, was barking at the refs for bad calls or whatever. So he cares, and he is really pushing these guys. And I just think the past couple coaches, for the Knicks didn't have that same mentality as Thibodeau. And we've seen Thibodeau. He's been a successful coach. Heck, with the Bulls too, you know? So I think the New York Knicks are going in the right direction. Like you said, RJ Barrett, he has had a few games where he's looked like he's one, it could be one of the premier players in this league. Then some games he's looked a little off, you know? So if he could just put together and play some consistent basketball, now he doesn't have to be like LeBron and averaging 25, 10, and 10, you know, pretty much a triple-double. But if he can, you know, average 20 to, you know, 20, 20 plus, you know, 5 and 5, somewhere around that, that'd be more than enough for the Knicks. And because then you have guys like Randall right now who's averaging almost like a triple-double, it seems like. So I think the Knicks are in good hands. And Fromitz, I know your Nets, they're in good – I mean, KD's out right now, and I think Kyrie's out tonight too. But I watched a few of their games, and when all of them are playing, they look dangerous too. So New York basketball definitely trending up.
Yeah, I like that you mentioned my Nets. I mean, I think for us, really, we got to clean up on the turnovers, better communication on defense, because we're scoring a lot of points. We're also allowing the most points in basketball, which is why we're 500 right now and not like 7-2, which we should be, as we lost like games that we should be winning. Tonight against Philly might be a tough one. No KD, no Kyrie, obviously. No Spencer Dinwiddie, who's out for the year. It'll be very tough. But we got guys who want a ball, want to fight. So I expect guys like Caris LeVert, Joe Harris, Jared Allen. Jared Allen's looking like a top five center right now. He made Rudy Gobert look very childish when we beat up the Jazz by 34. So there's definitely a lot of promise. Say that again.
I said, pay that man. He's working for it. The fro is working for it.
I agree. Love the fro. Big fan.
Now, Fromitz, you think the loss of Dinwiddie was that big? I mean, listen, I think Dinwiddie's a great player, but I didn't think his loss would be as big as it seems to be for the Nets right now.
I think it's more so what he would have brought to the second unit. Even though he was starting, having a backup point guard like him on a second unit, he scores, he gets to the rim, he gets what he wants, basically. And now Caris LeVert, who's not typically a ball handler, kind of has to take on that role, and it's a little bit of a transition for him. But I think if you had those two playing alongside each other, it would have been pretty nasty and unstoppable. But I don't think it'll be that much of an issue as more guys play more games together. I think right now it's more so, it looks like it's a big issue only because of a brand new system, brand new coach, basically a brand new team playing together. So it looks bad just because the chemistry is not there, especially with no preseason or training camp, but I think it'll be fine.
Yeah, and that's the main thing too. A lot of these teams, or even like the Knicks and the Bulls, they haven't played in almost about a year. You know, it was not quite a full year. The season, say, stopped in like March-ish. I think it was early March. So when that stopped, and then they didn't make the bubble. So like a team like the Knicks, the Bulls, the Cavs, a lot of the, you know, lottery teams, they had almost a full year without basketball. And then you have teams like the Nets who made the bubble but got bounced early. So then they're you know, going on some pretty good time and not playing. But then you have a team like the Lakers and the Heat who were just playing just a few months ago. And now you're having them go right back at it for a full season. So this season in itself, or at least the beginning part, it's going to be a tough transition for a lot of teams, for teams that haven't played in a while and got to get back in the groove of things with not even just playing basketball, but with travel, practicing before games, like just the schedule of everything. And then you have teams like the Lakers and Heat who probably still need more rest. You have guys like LeBron, who's older, and Jimmy Butler, who just gave their heart and body for an entire playoffs. They need some more rest. So it's going to be a tough transition for every team. And I think that's why you haven't really seen, I mean, The Sixers actually have looked really good this season, but you haven't seen a top team so far. That's, you know, even a team like the Lakers, a lot of people think they can repeat, but they haven't proven or shown to be that dominant yet because I think of the transition, the start of the season, you know, being just different and off compared to every other year.
Philly also hasn't played anybody, but that's besides the point.
I didn't say that. You did.
Hey, I'll gladly say it. I don't like them. I don't really care. So you mentioned like teams starting off slow, whatever, because they just played in the bubble, like the Heat or like the Lakers. Who are some other teams that may not be that impressive early on? I'll start with you, Stevie.
I honestly think the Clippers haven't looked too good. I thought, you know, they didn't make the finals, so they had some more time to rest and prepare. And even though they lost Harold, they added Serge Ibaka. And I don't know, they just haven't, and they still have Kawhi. They still have Paul George. Granted, they did get a new coach in Tyronn Lue, correct?
But he was their assistant, so it's still
like... That's what I'm saying. It wasn't too much of a change. So, I don't know. To me, they haven't looked that impressive. The Warriors, I know they didn't have that much high of expectations, especially once Klay tore his ACL, but I thought they would be a lot better than they were last year. And they still, even with Steph, they still look like they're a bottom-tier team. I thought maybe they would be in the contention of making the playoffs. And as of now, I don't think they look like a playoff team at all. So, and one more, I don't want to take all the teams, but one more, the Boston Celtics, same with them. I mean, it seems like every game's been going down to the wire. And even like a guy like Tatum, he's been doing well, but it's been more Jaylen Brown that's been, now I wouldn't say carrying the team, but has been performing well. Tatum's been doing well, but I think he could be doing a lot better. So those are some of the teams I think haven't looked that impressive. I'm sure they'll turn it around soon and they'll all make the playoffs. Maybe not the Warriors, but the Clippers and the Celtics will probably get a high seed. But yeah, I haven't been too impressed with those teams.
I'm going to go to the Wizards. I know that they're trying to establish the chemistry between Russell Westbrook, Bradley Beal, brought in rookie Denny Avdia, but they just don't look good. Like, I get they have some promising guys, but Thomas Bryant isn't good as a starting center. Their bench isn't really giving much depth. Bradley Beal scored 60 points and they lost still. Like, that shouldn't happen. So I don't know what the deal is with them. I thought they were going to make the playoffs, but then if a team like the Knicks keeps playing the way they're playing, which they could under a Tom Thibodeau team, I really don't see the Wizards, who are supposed to make the playoffs in my eyes. They probably won't make it.
Could be off with this, but my one team is the Raptors. I mean, where have they been this season? I personally thought they were going to come out and be one of the stronger teams in the league, but they've been losing some very close games. Van Fleet's been putting up some solid numbers, but it hasn't been enough. Josh, I know you're not a big fan of Kyle Lowry, so I'm sure you're happy for me to say this, but yeah, the Raptors really haven't been impressing me too much, which gives me hope because I thought they were going to be one of the better teams to give the Knicks a hard time. And my other team I was going to say is the Wizards. You know, when they got Russ, I was like, okay, here's a guy that can give them the push that they need, but I don't know if it's the chemistry. I don't know if it's his personality. I don't know what it is, but they're very disappointing me too. And those two teams right there playing at the level that they're playing gives a lot of other teams in the league opportunities. So those are my two teams that are disappointing. In terms of the teams in the West, I mean, nothing's really surprising me too much. I will agree with Steve that the Clippers have been a little disappointing, but I just think that goes to bubble fatigue, which is what you see with the Nets, honestly, Josh. You know, we've talked about it. I put the Nets one of the top teams in the East, maybe one of the top teams in the league. And we're definitely seeing a little fatigue with them. You know, they are also, two of their stars are coming off of major injuries. So, but Raptors and Wizards are my two teams.
Yeah, I would add bubble fatigue, especially with the Nets, especially a guy like Caris LeVert, Joe Harris, really. I mean, he's had good games, but those two really haven't looked like they're midseason levels. And I think that's definitely because they played less than 2 months ago, no training camp, no real break.
And one other team I just thought about too, the Mavericks. I don't know what's going on in Dallas. I know Luka, I think, was hurt for a game or so, but then I don't know if Porzingis is playing, but I don't know what's going on in Dallas, but they haven't looked good at all. I mean, my Bulls just beat them by 10 the other night. So, and some of the teams I said earlier, even if they have winning records, I'm just not impressed with their performance, you know? So even if they're, I know like the Clippers are 6-3, the Celtics are 6-3, I'm not been impressed with how they've been playing. Even if they're winning games, I just think they could be playing a lot better. But a team like the Mavericks, they, you know, they're 3-4 right now and sitting at the 9th seed in the NBA West Conference. So, and you know, beginning of this season, I thought they would definitely, I wouldn't say top of the standings, but middle of the Western Conference standings, and they're just kind of sitting closer to the bottom. So who knows what happened there.
Yeah, we'll have more on next week's show because that'll wrap up this week's episode. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at the 3P Podcast. Our social media guy, Matt Engler, is doing a great job providing content daily, multiple times a day. So definitely check it out. We've got great stuff going. So thank you all for tuning in and listening, and we'll see you next week.